ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Hatakshasana Asinan Sva Vishneshviha Pavakan Shraddha Samyayam Samyuktas Pritaf Raha Bhagavagrahan Hatakashana asinan Svadishnyeshviha pavakan Shraddha samyama samyukta Vita praha bhagavat grahan Hatakasana asinam Svadishnyeshviha pavakan Shraddha samyama samyukta Vita praha bhavagrajan Ataka Asane, on the throne made of gold. Asinan, when they were seated. Svadishnyeshu, on the altar. Iva, like. Pavakan, fire. Shraddha, respect. Samyama, restraint. Samyukta, being decorated with. Pritaha, pleased. Praha, said. Bhava, Lord Shiva. Agrajan, the elder brothers. Translation. The four great sages were elder to Lord Shiva, and when they were seated on the golden throne, they appeared just like blazing, like fire blazing on an altar. Maharaj Prithu, out of his great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint as follows. Purport. The Kumaras are described herein as the elder brothers of Lord Shiva. When the Kumaras were born out of the body of Lord Brahma, they were requested to get married and increase the population. In the beginning of the creation, there was a great need of population. Therefore, Lord Brahma was creating one son after another and ordering them to increase. However, when the Kumaras were requested to do so, they declined. They wanted to remain brahmachari throughout life and be engaged fully in devotional service of the Lord. The Kumaras are called naistika brahmacharis, meaning they are never to marry. Because of their refusal to marry, Lord Brahma became so angry that his eyes became reddish. From between his eyes, Lord Shiva, or Rudra, appeared. The mode of anger is consequently known as Rudra. Lord Shiva also has a sampradaya party, known as the Rudra Sampradaya, and they are also known as Vaishnavas. So the Lord Brahma, as the most pious of the living entities in the universe, he takes on a position of the secondary creation to establish the environment or manifest the environment for the living entities to be engaged in the fulfillment of their desires. The whole creation is based on this principle. What is one's desire? That's the environment. Because then a desire has to be fulfilled in an environment. The desire doesn't just happen on its own. We may have this idea, attracted by the mystic potencies, that things will just happen, just for no cause, no reason, just out of nothing. But that's not... what's the relationship? It just happened. We want it. It happened. Where's the relationship? Where's the responsibility? Right? Where's the, obligation? Right? Because if it just out of a puff of smoke something happens, what's your obligation? Right? The smoke blows away. But when it comes from people, and that happens because they're active in a situation, in an environment, then you have an obligation. So this obligation becomes the basis of relationship. Right? You're obliged, then you have to deal properly. Now, of course, if we look at this from the mechanical point of view, then or the economic point of view, then it's always a disturbance or a problem, because then you have an obligation to somebody and you kind of wish you didn't, right? But Krishna's idea is that personal relationships, that's the most essential element. Right? Because ultimately the living entity, being a person, is relating to the Supreme Lord as a person, and the Vaishnavas as persons. That's the whole actual point. And so that interaction, because if it's just a matter of a situation or the potencies or things happening, that's just the mechanics. Krishna's already doing that as God. He's expanded everything. He's established everything. And so that goes on, but that's just facts. Facts are not that inspiring. Yes, if you're a scientist, maybe it is. you know, if you're a historian, that's all you got. But in actuality, it's not the substance. It's the exchange. So the exchange will mean that you have an obligation. So rights may be there, but the consideration, because it says here, Maharaj Prita, out of great gentleness and respect for them, began to speak with great restraint. Right? Could have just said that Pritamar said. But it's not. It's pointing out the aspect in the relationship because of that respect. Then he's very gentle. That's based on that respect. And he's greatly restraining what he's saying, being, in other words, it's not a problem. It's just he's very careful in picking, choosing each word. Right? So already the mood, it's gentleness, that's been chosen. And each word is being chosen. So then that relationship goes night because he takes that effort, the Kumaras will respond with the same effort. It's natural. What you put into it is what you get back. Right? Sophisticated Western society, someone gives you go to a wedding, you give a particular gift, and you know, the cultured families, they actually have a book, they have a list of who gave what it's worth. So that then in the future, if they have a interaction with that family again in some kind of formal or wedding, they make sure they give a similar gift. Principle's the same, maybe a bit mechanical, but the principle's right, principle's good. We may say, oh, that's all artificial. No, it's not. It's artificial to get benefit from people and not reciprocate. That's artificial. So here then, Prithu Maharaj is being very careful because the principle is relationship. Krishna made it this way. He could have just, just Brahma could have manifested, he could have just made the whole universe, everything already there, all the living entities, all the situations. It could have easily already happened. There's no need that then Brahma has to appear on a lotus, then he has to expand his sons, they have to get married, they procreate children, and this way then the dynasties come down and the universe becomes populated. Krishna, just by his desire, it could have happened. But the point is if that did happen, what's the relationship? Right? Because then you're getting what you want, but where is the development of relationship? Where's the importance of relationship? You wanted the money, you wanted the fancy thing. It's just there. Now what? Who do you owe that to? Nobody. In the Vedic consideration, when you're born, there's obligation. Right? You're born, that means you have parents. Right? You're obliged to them. Right? Being born is a problem. Right? We think birth means just problem for us. No, birth means problem for everybody. Right? It's a problem. So people went through that problem. You owe them something. Right? Then their parents went through the same problem and their parents. So you have a debt to that line of personages. Right? Because they've all gone through that problem. They didn't go through the problem. You wouldn't be there to enjoy your facilities. Right? The demigods, they're managing all those facilities. We just think, oh, it's there to just take. No, it's there because some demigod put it there. It works because some demigod is managing it. Your senses are able to perceive it and interact with it because they're managing all that. Right? Your eyelid blinks. Somebody's managing that. Right? The eyelash is there. It doesn't, when it falls out, somebody's managing it. It doesn't fall into your eye. Someone managed that. It fell into your eye. Someone managed that. Right? We owe them a debt. Because everything that you can see, someone's managing. Otherwise, what do 33 million demigods do, right? You know, this is not a modern, bureaucracy where everyone sits around and does nothing. This is one where they're actually doing work. Right? So So demigods, then the forefathers, the demigods, the sages, because then as a human being, how the human being can progress, how he can uplift himself, both materially and spiritually, that is given by the sages. When we say smriti, that means sages. Shruti is apurusheya, that's manifest from the Lord, it's directly the Lord. Smriti means when the great personalities, the great sages, studying the Vedas, apply it in their life and discuss it, and what are those discussions based on their practical application, that's documented as smriti. If you'll notice, they're all conversations. And who's conversing? Great personalities. So we owe them a debt, right? Then we have the just the general human populace, right? We owe them a debt because we may say, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go down to the supermarket, I'm the Lord of my own life. But why is there a supermarket? Just because you wanted it? You just one night were thinking, wow, it'd be great to have a supermarket. And then you went out and there it was. No, somebody made it. There's a person there. They made the road. They put in the pipes. That's why you have plumbing. The water runs because a person did it. It didn't just happen. So people in general, we owe it that. Right? And then all living entities, right? Because all this goes on because of living entities, right? The trees are there and all the different things, vegetables come. The vegetables, you know, is a living entity, right? There's bugs in the ground, they're eating whatever they eat, and then the plants, then they get the benefit from that. All the different things, all this is going on from living entities. So these five, just being born, you have a debt to these five. You don't pay it, you're sinful. This is not just, how do you say, just a Indian conception. This is just fact. Every living entity. So, here then, having so Krishna has designed it like this so that there's relationship, so that ultimately we see these five, but then where does all that come from? That comes from Krishna. So then if we establish our relationship with the Lord, with Krishna, then all debts are paid. Because the purpose of everything is simply to appreciate one's relationship with the Lord. Because the Lord being everything, he has a relationship with everything else, so you automatically will have all other relationships will be generated. So therefore then, all this goes on. They're born. The Kumaras were born from the body of Brahma. They didn't want to get married, right? So since Brahma is supposed to populate the universe, then this is not going to be very pleasing to him. The principle of being Naistika Brahmacharis is great, but when he's producing sons to produce more living entities, then it didn't work so great. So he became angry. From the anger, that manifests Lord Shiva. So therefore, Shiva is the younger brother of the Kumaras, because of the Brahma's anger at the Kumaras, then Shiva was appeared. Like that. So they are heads of the Sampradaya. Lord Shiva is the head of the Sampradaya. So in this way, the actual position we see is that the situational manifestation which Lord Brahma was creating here, then that is to be considered. But we also see here that then Prabhupada is referring to the other aspect, that the four Kumaras and Lord Shiva, then they are the heads of the Vaishnav Sampradayas that make us aware of what's actually going on, what's actually the purpose of things, why things are going on. Because if we don't have that, even though one is nicely dealing with all obligations, still it's not enough because all those obligations are temporary. They move on. The living entity won't be satisfied. So the real purpose of human life then is given by these sampradayas. Right? So that's the we have these parallel elements going at once. We have to be able to appreciate that they happen at once. And of the two, the Sampradaya line is more important than the dynastic lines. Both are important, but the expression of the understanding of Krishna consciousness, the expression of devotion to the Lord, that's the superior of the obligations of the personal interactions. Any questions on this? Yes.
It's a general principle that you can trace the effect
to the cause. That
the
effect is present in the course. So something cannot cause an effect which is not
there. Okay.
Cause. So how can Lord Brahma, who we usually understand to be a jiva, generate a complete different tattva like Lord Shiva?
That means Brahma is not creating, he's just the cause of the manifestation. Like that, because see, is that all the energies are eternal, so it's not that one's creating the other, it's just a matter of manifestation. So generally means otherwise, where does Shiva Tattva manifest from? Does that make sense? So better he manifests from Brahma, because then that puts him in a junior position. At this, you know, in relationship and all that. Then for the Vaishnavas, they understand he's the senior Vaishnava. So then in that way, he's senior to Brahma. But for those who are materialists, they will tend to think Shiva is supreme, Shiva is God. But if he's manifest from Brahma, it kind of doesn't work out so good for that, you know, logically. So it kind of puts things in place. And it's also a very, very common element of fun is that the senior manifests as junior. You know, it's like Balaram, though he is the source of Mahavishnu, he manifests as junior to Advaitacharya. You know, as Nityananda. So, or Krishna, he's the original, but he's the junior to Balaram. So it's very, very common. It's more fun that way. Right? You're the protector of everyone, but you manifest as the one who is protected. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem. Something.
Maharaj, that was very sweet what you just said. Is that like an opulence of detachment?
Is that an opulence of detachment?
That you're manifesting as junior.
I would take it further, because detachment is only of value in that it creates a favorable environment for appreciation or attachment. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if we are materially attached, then where's the space for being positively attached to the Lord? So therefore, detachment to the material becomes advantageous to cultivate the attachment to the Lord. So detachment is only a necessity when we are speaking in relationship to the material world. Otherwise, in the spiritual platform, we don't talk about detachment. Here it's considered an elevated principle because it gets one closer to liberation or free from the material entanglement. But on the transcendental platform, it's understood it's a lower. That's why the gopis, after Krishna left the rasa dance the first time, when he came back, then very sweetly and very pleasantly, the gopis are put the question before him that, you know, what's the position of the Atmarama? In other words, they were basically chastising him that he's, you know, insensitive. Right? Because the position of Atmarama is there is no detachment, there is no attachment. It's just a neutral state. So that state of neutrality is not special when it comes to relationship. Right? So that's why it's said that if it comes, means you should not associate with materialists, right? And materialists of two kinds, the sense enjoyer and the Mayavadi. But if push comes to shove, better a sense enjoyer than a Mayavadi. Mayavadi should just be avoided at all costs. Because at least there's the concept of personal relationship and the value of it. It's just that the quality that they've chosen is inferior. Right? The person who has a disdain for all metals then won't be able to appreciate gold. But a person who likes metal but can't discern between gold and iron, you can train him in the difference. But the person who does not appreciate metal at all, then what do you work with? There's no value. So you can't actually teach them the higher principles. So it will be, of course, from the position of as Godhead, because of detachment, he doesn't have the social status and all that's not important for him. It's the relationship rasa. But the actual drive to it will be the sweetness that will be there, and even though you're protecting everyone, they're making that endeavor to protect you. Like the devotee, when he's praying to the Lord or sometimes saying things to the Lord, you'll see it's not uncommon that they make a point about for his welfare, you know, that everything will go nicely for him, right? So it's just because of that affection, you want everything to go nicely for them, though he's actually the one that makes everything go nice. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's the feelings. So the feelings are the most important. So the element that we may be harsh on whimsical material feelings is simply because they're being misapplied. Not that the principle of feelings is not higher than logic and renunciation. But the point is if we bring that out too strongly, then that whimsical sentimentality will take precedence and no one will get out of the material world. Because the point is getting into the spiritual world means you're out of the material world. Like that. So that's just the neutral state. So the neutral state is better than being in the material world. But the principle of relationship and interaction based on feelings, that's the highest. But you can't manifest it if the lower aspect, the secondary, is primary. Right? Means when primary is secondary, it works. But when secondary becomes primary, which is what's happening in the material platform, then it won't function. That's why we're so strong on just sentiment and emotions and all that, but at the same time, all we talk about is sentiments and emotions. It becomes confusing. But what we mean is that if it's being misapplied, money being wasted can't be applied properly. So the point is the money spent, but we're very harsh on it being misapplied and very, you know, and trying to cultivate is proper. But that becomes a confusion because we'll take it, oh, it's the money. It's not the money. It's the principle. Just like the material world, the problem is not the material world. The problem is our view that it's separate from the Lord. Otherwise, it's the Lord's creation, an inferior creation, but it's still the creation.
So when we say, for example, that God has six opulences and one of them is detachment, you know, vairagya,
yes.
There's more going on than that he doesn't care about being God. It's not that... There's more going on than that.
And we see that detachment and knowledge of the opulences are put into their own category. Those two are together. And then beauty, fame, power, and wealth, those are in one category, with beauty being the prominent. It's the first of all the opulences. Because those are the... Those are the environments of exchange. The other two are necessary to see to the quality of the exchange. Right? The exchange doesn't go... Like here, Prithu Maharaj is with great gentleness, great restraint, then the quality will be very good. But the focus is on the exchange with the Kumaras, not that I'm being very gentle, I'm being very restrained, so I'm doing everything perfect. No, that is... that's sadhana. But here we see it's spontaneous. It's very exemplary because that exemplariness has come to the point of naturalness.
So Parashara Muni describes that, like those opulent. Does he go into that?
Yes, I can't remember where it's discussed, but one of the acharyas is going into detail on, I think it's Vishwanath, about the opulences, and because all the opulences, see, the thing is look at, okay, here would be the application. If you look at it from bhava, or actual relationship, right, the experience of relationship, then it's going to be, its beginning point will be, beginning of manifestation will be what will inspire interaction, right? So that's called Uddipan, right? Means within Vibhava. Then Uddipan means that which makes you think of Krishna, right? So now if those first four opulences, when you see those, when you remember Krishna, you remember it generally within the pastimes or within a particular mood. But when you see renunciation or knowledge, then it will bring out the aspect of God, you know, of being, you know, Paramatma, being in all things, all where, all knowledge. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that from that point of view, they're in their own category. Mm-hmm. But as far as it goes, is that, of course, to act in a way, you know, Radharani is only interacting with Krishna, so there's a detachment there, right? But at the same time, it's only in support of that attachment to Krishna.
Right.
You understand? So it's not prominent, but when we make knowledge and detachment prominent, it changes the flavor.
Hmm.
So we should, that's in connection to relationship, then it would be, there'll be a distinction. In relationship to him as God, there's no distinction made. Like that, it's another opulence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's great. Okay, yesterday in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there was a question given to Jai Dwaita Swami, and he suggested that we ask you.
Oh. Okay.
Does everyone
Clever.
Remember? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We call that the deflect.
So, what's your opinion of secular education within ISKCON?
Jai Dwaita Maharaj, I must say that was well played. The point is, how do you define secular? You know, that's the main principle. Means the modern definition is a basically you can say a 1,000-year-old attempt to separate off intellectual development from the restraints of the Christian church. We're being very specific here because in the ancient times, no other church restricted intellectual development and science. They were synonymous. It means if God created everything, that means the study of the creation is also part of the study of God. So no other religion really has a problem with that except Christianity. So somehow or another, then in trying to deal with the element of faith, the approach to applying the intellect didn't figure for most, because why did one take up Christianity? It was out of faith. It wasn't a life, there is no Christian lifestyle. There is no philosophy. So one would have to just only based on faith have that. So to do that, one's going to actually have to inspire it through faith. Right? So it's not that by speaking the nice philosophy and all that, that you've convinced people. It's just simply you are able to bring about a change in feelings. Right? So that's good if you're looking at it from the principle of you're taking people from a polytheistic viewpoint and trying to bring them to a monotheistic viewpoint, then it was very effective. So one cannot fault that aspect of their methodology. Difficulty is because you're dealing with human beings, and human beings means is a combination of the body, the mind, and the intelligence, consciousness. Without addressing all of that, which they didn't, and at the present time still are having problems with, then, because you'll always have an intellectual class, you'll always have a practical class, you'll always have an economic class, you'll always have these aspects, art and all these things, there's no addressal. There is no Christian addressal to intellectual administration, economics, and art, right? Or to celibacy, household of life, and renunciation. They play with it. They come up with something that basically is workable as long as you don't think about it. You know, as you work on just the sentiment, it'll function. But if you analyze it, it falls apart very, very quickly. So, because of this weakness and the inability to be able to, once having established the monotheism, to be able to allow the intellectual fields and the other fields to prosper without direct managerial control, then you're going to have a fight that started in like the 1100s, and then in the 1700s, then the intellectuals and the state and the economy was able to separate itself because it couldn't prosper otherwise. So also a necessity, because human life means dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and bhakti. But the others can't prosper. So then you have to separate them. But that's only niti, that's only practicality. In reality, you can't separate them. So both the church's inability to address them, I mean fully, scientifically and philosophically, and the academics' inability to be able to see, you know, their secular knowledge, it's only God's knowledge, it's only discussions about God. There is no such thing as secular. It absolutely, it's an illusion that it exists. Both parties are in total ignorance on that platform, you know. So the difficulty comes as we think secular, that there is some advantage to progressing materially separate from God. And that by that, then materially we will be nicely situated. And then, yes, of course, we can connect that to Krishna. But the distance between the inception of that thought and the actual practical application is sometimes so great that in the process one completely forgets that that's what's supposed to do. So you could probably say for most devotees, when they deal with the concept of secular education, though they'll say how it can be used for Krishna, actually never do. That's just my experience. I may be wrong. There may be pockets of devotees here and there in the world that have perfectly harmonized it with Krishna consciousness, but I haven't seen it yet. You know, I haven't seen it, no. So the difficulty comes is that there's a faith that there is, it means it comes from a dualistic concept that God and his creation are not, that are different. So, right? I mean, in other words, if it's secular, that means it's not connected with God. So it's actually an atheistic concept. So the point is what's important, that it's secular, or is the facts and figures of the thing actually important? Right? It means you want to learn some geography. So is the geography itself on its own stand as important, or that it's not studied connected to God is important? You understand? So for the academic, which is the person who's going to authorize your situation within that and ratify that, yes, you are educated, it's important to him that it's not connected to God. You connect it to God, they won't approve it. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, if you don't present an atheistic face, then they won't buy it. And personally, I haven't seen yet one devotee go into that field and survive. And I'm talking about the most intelligent, qualified people in our movement. I've not seen one of them. Again, maybe considered too absolute, but I have not seen, and I've dealt with the top guys. They become affected. They take on the atheistic mentality. You quote something for Shastra and they'll say, well, that's not scientific. That's atheism. That's not scientific. That's not being intellectual. That's not being, what's their favorite word you have?
Intellectual integrity.
And that there's the other thing of being, it starts with an O. The one starts with an S, that's the bad one. The one starts with an O is considered very good. Objectivity, yes. And subjectivity. They'll say, oh, that's subjective. It's not objective, though their objectivity is the absolute and total subjectivity of their mentor. It's an absolute hypocrisy from top to bottom, as far as actual intellectual thing. They're using their brains, they're extremely smart people, like that, but their philosophy is totally bogus. So, we have to be able to see is that, what do we mean by this? Because we bantered around as if it's just some normal thing, like, you know, everybody's got to breathe and pass stool or something, you know. But the point is secular means it has nothing to do with God. So if you're able to take that body of knowledge and actually connect it, I don't mean by talk, everybody talks, but I mean in reality, it won't smell secular anymore. But that also doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? The point is if it's actually valuable in Krishna consciousness, then we should be able to apply it in a very Krishna conscious way. Therefore, one learns language or one learns these different things. Prabhupada said that. Learn language, learn math, learn geography, all these different little things. And they're useful, but their only usefulness is in connection to Krishna. And getting a job to be able to maintain your family, so far, we haven't mentioned anything about Krishna, and that's all that comes out of devotees' mouths. Why do you have to have the degree? Well, because you have to take care of yourself in the future. We have to be practical. We have to make money. We have to take care of our family. Have you heard one word about Krishna yet? No. And they can continue for another 5 minutes and never mention Krishna. That's the problem. Is their view of it is actually secular, which is atheistic. So the problem with the secular is it is born from atheism, and those who deal with it take on that move. But the point is the subject matter that it's discussing is not secular and is not atheistic. It's just an approach to it that what I can observe with the senses is fact, and what's not observable by the senses is not fact. But the problem is human beings are more than animals. So the difficulty comes is the secular education means animal knowledge. And so it's going to give animal results. And you can see it. It doesn't work that great. As far as consciousness and character and culture go that are being discussed here by Maharaj Prithu, he's very educated, but he doesn't take on that atheistic flavor. That's the difficulty with it. It's the flavor it takes on. As we mentioned before, there is no such thing as knowledge separate from God. So that's what we say. Is we'll say, oh, it's a separate knowledge. No, it's not. Language, how it works, it only works because the concept, there's nouns and verbs. Where does that come from? That comes from Sanskrit. That comes from God. So the point is you're trying to express a mood through the environment. Right? If I want to express a mood, I will say something, but I have to refer to the environment. So I have to deal with facts. I have to deal with nouns. That's the way God created it. So there's no such thing as language is separate from God. The only difference is our mentality. We can see it as separate. So the point is we don't have a problem studying what would be classified in the modern usage as secular knowledge. We have a problem that the mentality that the devotees do study it is actually secular, which means atheistic. They may say, ultimately it's for Krishna, but good try. I haven't seen it hardly. You know, I'm saying a little bit will be there,
you know, the family will end up at the temple. They do chant their rounds. They offer their prasad. These are all major, major things. But as far as volume of their lifestyle, by bulk, it's very minor. And so all those bulk of things, because of the secular, they're unable to see its connection to Krishna. The same study makes them unable to actually see things in connection to Krishna. Yes.
So what's your answer to the concern that people say that if you send your kid to Gurukula, when they get out of Gurukula, what are they going to do when they get back to Ohio? How are they going to be prepared for that?
Not wanting to be ignorant here, but there's actually people in Ohio?
They're secular.
Huh?
They're secular people.
Secular people, okay. Really? Ohio, wow. Okay, if you said New York or something, then I could relate to it. But Ohio? Okay, so the point is why, what do they want to do when they get to Ohio? You know what I'm saying? When you say, what are they going to do? What does that mean? What are you going to do? What's the meaning?
Make money.
So it's simply an economic consideration.
Yeah.
So the only consideration is artist. So dharma, kama, moksha, bhakti, 4 out of 5 they don't care about. It's only the economics. So that's my point, is that that's all the secular does. Okay, but what about the full education? And secular education doesn't deal with the other 4. It doesn't. It has no capacity. That's the point. So therefore, if you're going to run human life on one artha, and that one happens to be just artha, then all you have is ethics, which means how to practically get something done, justice, when it doesn't go the way you want it to go, and economics. But engaging your senses, actually having substantial relationships with people, being able to understand that the only way things function is by sacrifice, it's not all about you, and that ultimate sacrifice is for Krishna, that they'll never have. So the point is yes, they'll go to Ohio, they'll get their job, and then when they die, then they can be born in Ohio again. You know? But the difficulty comes is, what about the other 4? The problem's not that, okay, you need some certain knowledge to be able to function in the world. That's not actually the discussion. The discussion is, why would any devotee ever think that if you have that, that's enough in education? That's the scary part. Because the point is you may get a job. Okay, that's important. But the thing is once you have the job, it only makes money and creates a situation. They won't know how to live as a human being in that situation. So they can't engage their senses. Right? That means they don't know what to eat, how to eat, how to dress, how to interact with the family. They can't even have intimate relations between husband and wife. They don't know anything. Their marriage falls apart. The kids run off. So they did all that. And that, now can you say that's successful? If I invested a ton of money into something that flopped, would I say that was a good investment? So now, look around. Look around at the marriages, the families. Look around and tell me, so was the secular education that valuable? If we're being just practical here, because I know the question comes from we're just being practical here, so we're just turning it practical. Is it actually getting what you want? Do we have these body of satisfied devotees who have gone through the household life with their facilities and all that, now are retiring and are dedicating themselves fully to Krishna consciousness because they've understood that there is nothing in the material world of any value. But they're expert at dealing with it, so they don't have a problem being situated within it, but they don't have any value for it as such, separate from love. Do we have a great body of such persons? Right? That should be called a big vanaprastha ashram that's giving such nice direction to the grihastha. It's not happening. Why? Because they're secularly educated. They don't know how to act as human beings. They only know how to make money and pay the bills. And beyond paying the bills, they don't know how to interact with themselves, with others, with their family, with their friends, and therefore they don't have much. But that, because nobody has much, we call that the great society. But it was so great, why did they join in the first place? Because it wasn't great. Why have been people been rebelling against it since time immemorial? Diogenes, you know, lived in a barrel back in the Greek times because it wasn't great. Right? The hippies, they rebelled because it wasn't great. And now I got to hear from a hippie that, you know, I got to get a secular education and make it in the mainstream. That's like, that's called a hypocrite. Yes.
Maharaj, in the living entity has eternally a need for action and having relationship consequently. So this starts in the spiritual world with the Supreme Being also having seniors, juniors, and equals that he relates to eternally. And this comes down even in the purport also that the demigods, as you well expressed, they have these relationships, or at least the need to practice such relationships.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, always there is this application.
Yes.
Towards, we respect seniors, relate equally with peers, and then serve or receive service from juniors.
Yes.
And this also happens in the material world. Any materialistic person to achieve a goal and establish or maintain a relationship.
Means
so,
that anybody
no,
who's
the question, Maharaj,
okay,
kindly, is what actually is the percentage of these three maintaining an equilibrium, you know? Because in the spiritual world, Krishna, you say it's absolute. It's 100%. He doesn't need to question, oh, I need to relate to my juniors, I need to... But in the material world, we see that one is more, has more taste to relate to the junior because obviously he doesn't have to serve so much. So in the devotional atmosphere...
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Means in the material world, we'll put more emphasis on the senior towards junior because then there's the element of the conditioning of I'm in control. Because controller and enjoyer, because when you control, you can enjoy. What's not understood is that the controlled enjoys more than the controller. That's where we made the mistake. We see Krishna's in control, he's enjoying. But what we missed the point, because we don't have the association of the eternal associates, is that those who are controlled enjoy more than the controller. Right, the parent is controlling the child, but he's always worried, no, don't go there, don't do this, we've got to get something to eat, where are we going to stay? So there is a taste in taking care and that protection, like that. But the child is completely being taken care of. Their taste is even greater, like that. So we've missed that, but that comes by association, because that is only tasted by those who are surrendered, right? And if someone is looking at them, looking at Krishna's energy from the viewpoint of to enjoy it, one won't get the association of those who aren't trying to enjoy it. So technically speaking, that's our weakness, is we have no actual understanding. You know, it means the jivas and the material phenomena. We don't have any actual understanding of what it means to be fully surrendered. It's a new concept. You know, we want people to surrender to us, but being in, and when we are in the position of junior, you know, the guy comes in with his hordes, he takes over, makes us into slaves. You could say it's on the material platform basically absolute surrender, but no one likes it. It's not, they're not feeling surrendered, right? Because they want to be in control. So then the difficulty comes is that concept eludes us. But that's where the sweetness is. So that's why it seems strange. Why would God want to be in the junior position where, you know, Nanda Maharaj is telling him, go bring my shoes, right? And he's so small, he's having trouble bringing it. But, you know, it's the cuteness of just, you know, that attempt. Or the elder gopis are telling him to dance, you know, like that, and clapping their hands, and he's dancing for them and stuff like that. So that taste, that's why Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because someone in the masculine position can't taste it. So being Purusha, he can't actually taste it.
So he has to come as Prakriti, but he's not going to come as just any Prakriti. He's going to come as the Surup Shakti, as the total, you know, his total potency. And so then he'll be able to get the total taste of that surrendered Krishna. You know, so therefore only Radharani tastes that in the totality, so he takes on that mood. So it's something, that's why it's very special what's being given. Because in Vaikuntha, there's still the idea, I will enjoy. It's spiritual. I'll be on the same planet, or I'll be an associate, or I'll have the same opulence, or the same form. But Radharani, there's no consideration of any of that. There's nothing to gain for herself except for Krishna's pleasure. So that absolute total surrender, that's where Krishna comes, and that's what he's coming to give. So all those who follow in that line, they can actually taste the same mood. Right? You know, according to capacity. But the point, it doesn't matter. If we're infinite, then it doesn't take much to fill us up. You know, so we'll be happy. Right? So, and Radharani, unlimited, but she tasted unlimitedly. But if we connect to the unlimited, then we basically have a view, a glimpse of that unlimited. You know, which is way beyond our minuteness. So it's great. So it's only through association that that's gained, and it's also only through association that's tasted. Right? Means, in other words, the situation is association, and the operation is interaction, and therefore, in that association, it'll be tasted. So for Krishna, it's all about being with the devotees.
It is proper to say that the devotee should endeavor to maintain a total equilibrium in these three relationships.
Oh, should the devotees maintain all three? Yes, you have to, because the point is that it starts actually with senior, because the point is God's senior, Radharani's senior. Then everybody's expanding from them is their senior to us, because it's all Vishnu Tattva and all internal potency, right? And so we're jivas, so we're the junior. And then within jivas, there's those who are in the senior position. So this idea of being able to accept authority is essential. If one has authority issues, you know, it's natural because the material world is all based on authority issue, right? It starts with that. I want to be the controller and enjoyer. So that there are, in other words, the more materialistic the persons are, you know, then especially within the modern sense, the more you see that there are authority issues, you know, and the more that is based, religiously based, then the less there is that aspect of issue. So the more we separate it or segregate it like this, the secularize it, then the authority issue comes up, because you can only be successful if you're the controller, right? Otherwise you can't be the enjoyer. So if you're committed to being the supreme enjoyer, then you have to be the supreme controller. So that means no one else can be in control. So, but because you're dealing on, some make it very obvious, you know, a dictator and those, they make it very obvious and no one else's control. But in the Age of Enlightenment made it that you do all the nasty things that everybody did before, but you say it really nicely. That's all. You use really nice terms for it, so no one notices that you're just as bad as them. You know, so in other words, the politically correct person, they're actually speaking pure Machiavellian, you know, how you say, philosophy. But they aren't as blunt and direct as Machiavelli. They just use very, very nice terminology. But the effect is exactly the same. So the point is that one would have such things. That's normal. No one should complain about it. But the point is that it has to be at least intellectually appreciated, that it has to be endeavored to give it up, because we're always going to be supported by seniors. Now, where that really, it means that creates a very deep, inspiring place, but that kind of, like you could say, liveliness of inspiration comes from dealing with equals. Because they're exactly equals, so that element of the chivalry creates that little thing of, you know, it creates a spunkiness in it that creates some life that won't come from the senior. The senior is more sober and everything like that. And then the junior, then that will also create all nice good qualities. You get good qualities from the senior, you get good qualities from the junior. But there is then that kindness and all that will be the prominence, while the other, the surrender. But with the equal, then you don't have those two
you know, surrender and kindness isn't the prominence. And so it has another flavor. So cultivating all three will make for a balanced person.
So this is where the training on Varnashrama Dharma starts.
Yeah, Varnashram starts with acceptance of authority. It's the first point to be made. God, his position, the creation, Brahma, Varnashram as position, the Shastras, Brahmins, seniors. That's before he even discusses anything about Varnashram. In practically, he's already established all that. Because it's the first point. Because only from authority, then you learn how to deal with authority, with equals and with juniors. Otherwise, where do you learn? So that's the difficulty. The modern society doesn't accept authority, therefore they don't learn how to deal with others. So the common ground is everyone wants to be the Lord and enjoy, so that means you want to control, so you have to have facilities to control, so therefore economics becomes the common basis of the materialistic modern person, because it's the only platform where you won't have disagreement. Making money, everybody will agree is good. How I enjoy my senses, somebody will say that's good, not. Dharma, everybody has a different thing. Liberation, that's too scary. So economics is the common ground that you can pull in. It has that little, it has that scope for sense gratification, but that slight bit of renunciation that you're caring for others' sense gratification. So it appears to be, you know, an ideal position, right? Is it right to say Varnashrama starts at home? Means for the practice of the individual, yes, but for the training, it starts at school. That's the home of the guru, right? Yeah, so it means, yeah, you could say, in that way, you could say it's in the home, so the home of the guru, that's Gurukula. That's where you actually learn how to be a human. Then you can apply your occupation, because we have to remember, making money is only Varna. Ashram is the big problem. Varna is a skill. You can go to night school, you can do this, you can do that, you can catch it. Because if you look at it, most people in the world, the degree they have has nothing to do with the job they have. For most people. Like that. So when they go, and if they see that, then they can go and make arrangements to try to get some other skills. And that's why the world has created a lot of facility for that. Online education and night education and, you know, all these different things. You can study in the summer. So many things are there. But the point is that's only Varna. That only creates facilities. Ashram is what you do with the facilities. There is zero education on that. Zero. I mean zero. That's rasa. So the thing is that we add a Shastric class to the secular education. That's good. But still the point is where's the lifestyle? So we've added knowledge, but we haven't added the lifestyle that goes with the knowledge. Because from Shravana, then there must be Manana. Manana means contemplation and practice. So all we do is Shravana, and from Shravana we apply it economically. But we get no spiritual benefit from it. That's why devotees much of the time can't connect their occupation directly to devotional service other than giving the money, which is good. But they can't see the philosophy in their occupation. Because it's not there's the concept of practical application has never been part of their education. Practically applied means it can make money. Just like if you're sitting there talking about something, you're doing something devotionally really good. I've heard it many times. A person does, let's say, they make excellent vases and all this, and it's really special. And then someone come up, wow, you could make a business out of this. You know, so many things devotees are expert at in the devotional field, someone will go, wow, you could do this in devotional service. But very rare you're doing something in that, and hey, you could do this for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? It's only because the conditioning, that's the problem with the secular education. When you go back in time, is that the education, the lifestyle, the philosophy, they were all part of the same course. Means you studied the philosophy and the practical education together, right? They were part of the same curriculum. And you followed the lifestyle. Does that make sense? Because if you look at all the old educational systems, they all had to study under a teacher. It wasn't just a state thing, impersonal. But when the state becomes the supreme, then you don't have a person. So therefore, your leadership then is committed to the state, which is supreme. So they're not actually technically leaders in that way. Your economics is for that. Your safety is for that. Everything's for the state. So economics is also for that. Education is for that. So it just comes along with the same enlightenment style of governance, where then the state becomes the supreme entity, rather than the individuals of the state.
In our society, it should sometime in the future be implemented, not radically, I mean, but the education is mainly in the Gurukula. I'm not against all.
Means the point is, Gurukula means the place of the teacher. So it has to be that what the teacher is teaching is more than just the academics, but is the lifestyle that they're leading. You know what I'm saying? That has to be gotten across. Because otherwise, then what's the standard? How do you community is based on common standards of social interaction. But if there's not a common standard, you don't have community, right? It means we can call our communities because everybody wants to serve Krishna. But on the material platform, there's no way you can call them communities. Because what they would eat, how they would live, their desires for their children, how they would discipline their children, how they interact with their children, how they educate their children, you know, how they interact as husband and wife, how they relate to the community, it's all different. So you can get two or three people together. Within a community, you could say that you have small groups of, you know, two, three, four people, you know, that facility of community gives opportunity that you can find two or three or four other people that are similar like you, and therefore create miniature communities within this larger overall arching thing of devotional community. But as far as the social community, it's not actually one.
So it always goes down to not just address the form, but always the essence of the change of consciousness.
Yes, it's the change of consciousness. You don't change the consciousness, then you have a whole lot of people that have different consciousness. How will they relate to each other? Right? So the idea, when we say Krishna consciousness, that means when we say, or let's say self-realization, the Atma, we mean body, mind, intelligence, and consciousness. Devotees will all be the same unconsciousness. But when it comes to the body, the mind, and the intelligence, that will be greatly different according to their actual conditioning. And it goes right back to their conditioning. Not, you know, we'll say, we're not the body Prabhu in that, but they will act exactly like someone from the particular social status coming from the country where they grew up. That's not changed. Like that. So the point is if you want to connect those, then there needs to be a broader education. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, what I'm trying to do here is avoid the external concept of the form and understand what's the principle of what the educational basis is. Does that make sense? Because otherwise then we'll have the same problem that someone will follow either the Vedic or the modern and you end up with smartas or, you know, armchair speculators. You know, so like that. And so we want to avoid that. Okay, so we'll end now. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.